Here on Tuesday, April 5th, we are recapping opening day and taking a look back to opening day 2015. We had two home run performances opening day 2015. Take that, Trevor Story. But I'm Adam Azer with Heath Cummings, and you know, we let the guy come on the podcast. We make him part of the podcast, you know, for the whole regular season, twice a week. And he shows up late. He doesn't leave his house early enough. Chris Towers, what an entrance.
Get used to it, folks.
On day one.
Yep.
Day one.
Look, I usually get up on a day that I just have to get to the office. I'm usually out of bed by about 8:05. It allows me to get out of the house by 8:45, and I get here at 9:15. Today I leave my house at 8:25. I wanted to make sure that I'm here on time for Adam Azer.
Already the story has changed because it was just 8:15.
Allegedly.
No, I said 8:25 first, and it took me 50 minutes to get home. Get here. I do not live that far. It was ridiculous.
You didn't leave early enough.
I blame Heath.
Well, but you know, before
just one question, Chris, did you leave early enough today? You were late. If you're late, you didn't leave early enough.
I was up late last night making crying MJ memes.
Oh yeah, that's great. More of this hilarious banter on the Daily Fantasy Live podcast. I know we have fantasy baseball to talk about, but what a game yesterday. Oh my goodness, can you believe that? Jason Wirth scoring on a sac fly to tie the game in the ninth. I thought Pierzynski was going to have that ball at the plate. Best game that we saw all day in any sport.
I was watching the Rockies Diamondbacks game and tweeting about Zach Greinke, and someone yelled at me on Twitter.
Oh, really?
For not watching the National Basketball Championship. And I was just like, it really stinks that me watching a different sport than what you are watching means that you can't watch that sport.
It's really
unfortunate.
I think it's because you're such a high volume tweeter.
I tweeted one.
People watch the game with Twitter and expect most of sports Twitter to be tweeting about the game. And then there's Chris just throwing in somebody's BABIP.
You know, this is why you can watch the game online, which is what I was doing until the end. I mean, that was an amazing game. And I know we have a lot to get to, but I just want to congratulate Sebastian Canada. I hope I pronounced it. Might it be Canada? I don't remember. I know this is a frequent emailer to the football podcast. It all. 141 points. We had 710 people submitting brackets in our March Madness pool for the podcast listeners.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I was really happy with that.
It's kind of sad that like he was in probably like several different contests, most of which had far less people but had some sort of prize, and he beat 710 people and he wins it. Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. 11 people had Villanova as their champion.
But like a public congratulations.
Okay.
So that's
Ed Keeley finished in second place. Steven Anderson, third place. And for you CBSers, if you want to know how we did, I regret to inform you, nobody is going to be happy about this, but Heath Cummings did the best of all the CBS people.
Yes.
56th place. Jamie was in 92nd place. And Scott and I tied 242nd place. Chris Towers, 433rd. And Al Melchior and Dave Richard were horrible.
I mean, you beat like 200 people.
Hey. That's like 33%.
Yeah, well, maybe if you watch less baseball, more college basketball, you'd do better in these things.
Hey, man. Let me live my life.
Let's get into the baseball here. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We have DFS advice for you a little bit later. We have Jacob DeGrom nicknames. We'll talk about Jeremy Hellickson. We'll talk about closers, as we already have closer news in Atlanta and in Philadelphia. But first, some quirky stats for you. Trevor Story became the first player to hit two home runs in his major league debut on opening day. More on him in just a second. Do you guys know how many home runs Cole Hamels gave up to left-handed batters last year?
The same amount he gave up to left-handed batters in the first inning today, or yesterday.
First two innings, I believe, yeah.
Oh, well.
Two home runs to lefties all year in 2015, and two home runs to Cano and Seager right off the bat yesterday. We could have two knuckleballers face each other on Saturday. Steven Wright and R.A. Dickey could be the first time since, I think it was 1988. I wrote 98, but I think it was 88. Charlie Huff and Tom Candiotti.
I don't think Charlie Huff was pitching in 1998. He would have been like 60.
Yeah. Minnesota's lost 8 straight opening day games, and Seattle almost won its 10th in a row. They have won 9 straight. So let's get the legit-o-meter out. 0 to 10. How legit are these guys? Start with Trevor Story, 80% owned, two home runs. In a game that Colorado obviously had a great outburst, Colorado scored 10 runs. Story had two homers. What do you think? 0 to 10 on the legitometer, Heath Cummings.
Well, that performance was a 10. I mean, can you get more legit than that? Wally Pipp was impressed. What's that?
I don't get that reference.
Well, Wally Pipp lost his job because of a great performance the day that he sat out.
Okay.
No? Wasn't that a good
No, Jose Reyes is Wally Pipp, yes.
All right, thank you. I will give it, though, a 4.
It didn't teach us anything new. I mean,
he has a flair for dramatic.
Based on his minor league track record, Trevor Story can hit for power, and he strikes out. He hit two home runs. He struck out twice. So now moving forward, the question is which of those wins out.
He's going to strike out more than he hits home runs.
I would say that's probably true.
Almost for sure.
Well, it was a very encouraging start. And Story, yeah, he's 80% owned. So I think, you know, just in case, you might want to be putting him on your radar.
And probably should be owned in all leagues.
Yeah, and I want to say that Dustin Pedroia homered twice on opening day last year. So did Hanley Ramirez. Now, Hanley Ramirez got off to an amazing start before his injury. And Pedroia had 4 home runs in April. And obviously, you know, tailed off after that. But it happens, you know. It was opening day, and that stuff happens. How legit is Jeremy Hellickson on a scale of 0 to 10? My goodness, six innings of 1 unearned run and 6 strikeouts, no walks at Cincinnati. Jeremy Hellickson.
Absolutely 0.
Yeah.
Negative if I could.
All right. How about a guy who's 50% owned? Chris Tillman. Velocity way up for Chris Tillman. He struck out 5 batters in 2 innings, and then a rain delay occurred, and Tillman never got back out on the field. So 2 scoreless innings, no hits, no walks, 5 Ks. 4 of those strikeouts were on fastballs. What do you think about Tillman? Legit-o-meter.
Here's the thing. I don't think that Chris Tillman was as bad last year as his numbers say they were. So I mean, I don't think he's going to strike out 5 batters every 2 innings. But when you look at his numbers from last year, he looks awful. 4.99 ERA, 1.39 whip. That is terrible. Now, take out what he pitched 25 and a third innings against the Blue Jays last year. He gave up 33 runs. Half of the home runs he gave up last year were against the Blue Jays last year. If you look at him against everybody else in the league, it was a 3.84 ERA and a 1.28 whip. I think that's more like who he is.
Which is a fringe starting pitcher.
Yeah, that's a 2-start streaming guy. I mean, 3.8 and 1.2,
fine.
Whatever.
And that's what he's been for most of his career.
Right.
Yeah, the velocity is interesting, though, because maybe that could lead to more strikeouts. It's only one start. It's one of those things like, let's keep an eye on it. But, you know, throwing a career high, basically, fastball, career best with miles per hour, that's pretty cool for Chris Tillman, who's 50% owned. So if you picked up Chris Tillman for a 2-start week and you saw what he did yesterday, it was only 2 innings, would you be comfortable dropping him for another 2-start pitcher in week 2?
It would depend on how good of a 2-start pitcher I could get for week 2, but probably.
Well, let me see if I can pull up some 2-star pitchers for week 2. Actually, Sonny Gray is now going to be a 2-star pitcher, FYI.
I would definitely drop him for Sonny Gray.
Yovani Gallardo, Kyle Gibson.
I don't think so.
Colby Lewis, Derek Holland. I might for Derek Holland.
Possibly.
Ubaldo Jimenez.
No.
Yeah, the options aren't great right now. All right, back to the legit-o-meter. Jake Lamb homered yesterday, 1-for-3 with a home run, 2 runs batted in, a walk and a strikeout. He batted 7th for the Diamondbacks against Colorado. Jake Lamb is 25% owned. Chris Towers on the legit-o-meter. How legit is Jake Lamb?
I'm never going to give a high answer to this on opening day. It's just not going to happen. I'll give you a 3.
Okay. I'm going to go 4.5.
I will say I regret not picking him up in our 16-team league.
He was a guy that had profiled coming into last year as a good source of power and then somehow turned into a high BABIP guy last year. And I think what I said a couple weeks ago was he better hit for power this year or he's going to be in trouble because the BABIP is going to crash. He's off to a good start.
All right, that's Jake Lamb. And finally on the legit-o-meter, Jock Peterson, 82% owned, 54% started, 2-for-5 with 2 doubles, an RBI, a run scored, and a strikeout. at San Diego. The Dodgers scored 15 runs in the most lopsided opening day shutout in baseball history. Jock Peterson off to a good start here. Legitometer.
I told you Tyson Ross was going to be historic this year.
I hate to be the hashtag well actually guy, but he struck out twice, which is
he struck out twice. I'm sorry, that is
sounds a little more Jock Peterson-y.
Yeah.
I think he's pretty much what he is. I think he's better than what he was in the second half of last season. But he's a drain on your batting average.
Well, let's give him a little bit of time. Let's not say he is what he is.
Well, I think the skill set is what it is. He's going to hit for a lot of power. He's going to strike out a lot, but there's room for improvement on what he did overall last season. Yeah. But I don't think he's what he was in the first half of last season either.
Okay. Well, let's hope he gets some stolen bases this year from him. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Some news already. We got some closer news. Looks like Arodys Vizcaíno, 32% owned, is the Braves' preferred closer. He will face the tough part of the order, which was the eighth inning yesterday. So, and then Jason Grilly came in and blew the save. So what is your read on the Braves' bullpen right now? Actually, let's loop it in with the Phillies' bullpen, because Dalyer Hinojosa would have gotten the save opportunity yesterday for the Philadelphia Phillies at the Reds if David Hernandez didn't blow it in the eighth. So Vizcaíno, Hinojosa, who would you rather own?
I would say Hinojosa, because it sounds to me like the Braves just don't have a closer. If they're saying he's our closer, but he's going to face the best part of the order, so there's a 60% chance that the best part of I guess it's 50-50, really.
You think that's going to last, though, or do you think they'll use him eventually?
If they're smart, it should last. You should use your best reliever. If the heart of the order is coming up in the eighth inning and you have a one-run lead, you should use your best reliever every time.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather have Vizcaíno just because I think he's the better pitcher. Give me the better pitcher.
Well, that's not true. You wouldn't. Dellin Betances is a better pitcher than almost every closer, but you'd rather have the closer.
Right. We're giving two situations here where these guys are reportedly
they're
similar situations. Closers.
Okay. You're telling me that Hinojosa is not going to be the regular closer?
No, I'm not telling you that. He was going to be the closer.
Because he was going to be the closer in game one, and David Hernandez blew the game in the eighth inning. I assume that Hinojosa is more likely to get saves than Vizcaíno. It's the only reason I'm saying Hinojosa.
Yeah. All right. I agree with that. All right, so Ben Revere left with a side injury. Might be an oblique injury. Dusty Baker says Revere is day-to-day, but put Michael Taylor on your radar. He came in and played center field when Revere was out. Sonny Gray scratched due to food poisoning. Rich Hill, we'll talk about him in a minute. Tommy Pham is on the DL. That took, not even one game. He's on the DL with an oblique strain. AJ Pollock's going to have surgery today, and if you're worried about Madison Bumgarner, bad start yesterday, 5 walks in 5 innings, 3 runs, 2 homers at Milwaukee. He did have the flu. He was battling flu-like symptoms or something like that.
There's also some speculation that his foot's not right. Is that right?
I don't know.
He had what was supposed to be a very minor foot issue in the spring. And neuroma? I don't know what that is.
Okay,
Neuroma in his left foot.
Yeah, he did miss a start in the spring with a foot injury.
I'm not a doctor, but it sounds like just pain.
So not worried. Like somebody in our 16 team league just put Madison Bumgarner on the block. Are you gonna be like you're gonna try to lowball him?
Sure.
It doesn't mean to me I'm not worried at all. I would try to lowball him, but your feet are pretty important. If his foot hurts when he's pitching, I would think a lot of pitchers would pitch worse if their foot hurt.
So you wouldn't necessarily want to trade for Madison Bumgarner right now.
I would try to lowball for him.
Right. All right then. We had a trade go down in that league, the Chris Towers League, the For the People League. 16 teams, Carlos Martinez for Jairys Familia. Who wins that trade? Carlos Martinez for Jairys Familia.
The Carmart side wins that trade. Yeah. Like, it's a 16-team league. Saves are hard to come by, but saves can also be overvalued in a weekly categories league.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's not that much of a downside to finishing in last place in a category. So, I think the Carmart side wins that.
I think that all three of us will agree that the Carmart side won it. It's interesting because I think on any site besides CBS Sports, Familia was probably being drafted sooner than Carmart was. So I don't know that we are with the industry consensus, but I think we all agree that Carmart's going to be a borderline ace this year.
I love Carmart. We all love Carmart, and I would have taken Carlos Martinez in this trade. And I brought it up because in 16 team leagues or any league where it's tough to find closers, I think they are by far the most overvalued position. And I think right now, as you look at situations that are evolving in bullpens and guys get hurt, guys lose their jobs, even if you have as many closers as you want, let's say you're in a roto league and you have three closers and you're not looking for any more, pick up whoever's on the waiver wire because they become really good trade bait. People overpay for saves. They don't really take into account that this is a position that you can find guys on the waiver wire. Maybe not great players.
It's the most fungible position in baseball. It's the position where talent is not, it's probably the only position where talent isn't the primary determining factor in fantasy value.
Right. Saves are.
Yeah.
Opportunity.
A role. Yeah, opportunity.
Right. All right, so back in opening day 2015, I mentioned Pedroia, Hanley Ramirez, they both homered twice. Clay Buchholz and Drew Hutchison had a good start. Kyle Kendrick threw seven scoreless innings. He was a DFS destroyer.
I remember that.
At
that
Milwaukee.
Oh, he ruined me.
Yeah.
He cost me a lot of money that first week.
Yeah.
Steve Pierce homered. He got off to a good start. Bartolo Colon had an 8 strikeout performance at Washington. And Angel Pagan doubled twice, which he did last night. Cole Hamels and Jeff Samardzija had bad starts. It didn't. I guess it meant a little bit of something for them. They had bad years by their standards. But we don't want to overreact to opening day. So with that said, who stood out to you guys yesterday on the real opening day of Major League Baseball?
Zach Greinke, I would just point out, he had a pretty miserable start. Gave up 9 hits, 7 runs, and 4 innings. I think that, anecdotally, I feel like pitchers that sign massive contracts kind of tend to just blow up in their first start in a new home. I know that's totally... I'm not bringing any evidence
to the
table.
That is the least Chris Towers stat
but
ever.
That is like, I feel like David Price is going to get rocked today, and I think it's just something that happens. Don't worry about Zach Greinke.
So stack the innings.
Unless you're Heath, and then start planning your parade for the I was right about Zach Greinke train.
Well, it's funny. I was telling Adam as we were talking before the podcast started, because we had a little extra time before we got going.
Why do we have extra time?
Oh, just some extra. You and I like to have a little pre-show talk before the rest of the show gets here.
Sure, when somebody's running late, yeah, sure.
My Twitter feed last night was a barrage of Tyson Ross sucks, ha ha ha, and you were so right about Zach Greinke, good job. And I don't think either one of those things are true after one start. Tyson Ross and Zach Greinke both had very bad starts. They may have very well just cost you week one. And that sucks. But I don't think that, and the nice thing with Tyson Ross, if you want to look for a positive, is the strikeouts were there and he didn't have walk issues.
Yeah.
Now,
walk five
probably
pitch.
Just means that he missed in the zone and got crushed.
Tyson Ross did not allow more than 4 earned runs in any start in 2015, and he allowed 7 earned runs last night.
You know, he didn't go deep enough into starts to allow more than 4 earned runs last year.
That is sort of true, but it is still an impressive stat. Meanwhile, Zach Greinke gave up 7 earned runs. That's as many as he gave up in all of April in 2015. So we'll just forget it.
Going to go ahead and say Zach Greinke will finish with a higher ERA this season than last.
Yeah.
Bold prediction.
All right. Feel that. Any other standouts, guys, you want to talk about?
Yeah, we mentioned the Cole Hamels 2 home runs to lefties. If you set the over-under at 1.5 for the rest of the season on home runs to lefties, I'd probably take the under.
Oh, I'll take the over.
I don't think there's that much to worry about. This is a guy that really does not have much to worry about. Like, you know, you look at him last season, the ERA was down, which was disappointing, but you look at strikeout rate, whiff rate. Don't look at me like that, Heath. Strikeout rate, whiff rate, you know, a lot of the indicators, you know, I think his velocity was even up. Like, there are not that many indicators that Cole Hamels is trending in the wrong direction.
I'm not worried at all about yesterday.
I will say, and it's somebody we talked about, I think maybe it was the end of last week, Zach Cozart, leading off for the Reds, was the only Red that acted like Jeremy Hellickson as Jeremy Hellickson and had a good day offensively. He's going to get a ton of at-bats at the top of that lineup. And as bad as their team is, he's got Eugenio Suarez, Joey Votto, Brandon Phillips, and Jay Bruce behind him. I don't feel like that's that much worse than most leadoff hitters. So I think he's going to have a lot of run scoring opportunities. He might be the surprise top 10 shortstop this year.
So Zach Cozart's 20% owned. He did go 3-for-3 with 2 doubles, a run, and an RBI. He got off to a very good start, had a great April last year, and then not so good after that. But there was some pop there. Who's more interesting to you, Zach Cozart or Scooter Jeanett, who homered off a lefty yesterday and had 4 home runs in 10 spring training games?
That was a very Cole Hamels-esque performance on the other side, because I think he had 4 hits against lefties, is what Scott White said in the office yesterday last season.
He crushed that pitch.
Yeah, he did.
It's a good reminder. We're going to talk about DFS later, but when the roof is closed, that is a good place to hit baseballs, because the ball was flying out of the yard.
Yeah.
I am more interested in Cozart just because I feel like he's not going to go 3-for-3, but I feel like his performance is more indicative of a way that he could be successful than Scooter Jeanett's.
Okay. So is it even... No, I'm not, it's a stupid question. I'm not even going to ask it. What a stupid question I was about to ask.
Please do.
No, I can't do it. So, Rich Hill, guys. All right.
Turns out he sucks.
No. I watched this game, and if Mark Canha at first base makes a catch, he's out of the third inning, Rich Hill giving up 2 runs. It wasn't a great inning, but Mark Canha makes an error, and they lift Rich Hill after 2 2/3. He wasn't even supposed to start yesterday, of course, with Sonny Gray getting scratched. So, Hill is 56% owned, 2 2/3, 3 hits. 4 runs, 2 earned, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts against the White Sox. I know Heath never wanted anything to do with Rich Hill, but Chris, what is your take on Hill after yesterday's start?
Well, you know, Rich Hill's 36, so of course Heath didn't want anything
to
do with
it. No, exactly.
It's one start. He wasn't expecting to start. He got moved off his normal routine. There seems like enough.
He was on normal rest.
Okay. I mean, probably more than normal rest. He hasn't pitched in a regular season game in nearly 6 months.
I think he was on actually normal rest, but still but wasn't expecting to pitch that day.
You have your whole routine. Yeah. I'm sure these guys have sleeping regimens and all this stuff that they go through in the day before they pitch. It's not necessarily the reason he struggled, but there are enough extenuating circumstances that I'm not going to write him off after 66 pitches. What he showed late last season, it's an extremely small sample size. But I don't think I drafted Rich Hill.
No, you don't think he's good.
I'm not going to like go to bat for Rich Hill, but I'm also not going to bury him after 66 pitches.
All right, two guys I wanted to bring up, Raisel Iglesias and Sean Tolleson. Iglesias is just going to fascinate me all season long. I'm not quite willing to call him a stud yet, but off to a great start with 6 innings, 6 hits, 2 runs, no walks, 7 strikeouts against the Phillies. I thought he was going to strike out like 14 batters yesterday. He was incredible. He only struck out 7, but in 6 innings, that's pretty damn good. So he's off to a good start.
We'll see what he does when he faces a major league lineup.
Yeah, exactly. And Tolleson is a guy that I wasn't high on it at all. I didn't draft him. I really think he's got a chance to lose that job because they have so many good pitchers in that bullpen. But he was really good yesterday. Now, I missed the first batter of the inning, and I think Odor might have made a diving stop behind him for the leadoff batter. But then he looked great with 2 strikeouts to end the game. Again, it's one game, but good start for Sean Tolleson. Is there anything else that really stood out to you fellas yesterday?
Garrett Richards looked really good for about 2.5 innings. And then he went all Garrett Richards. And this is the problem with Garrett Richards, is that there are flashes of just absolute dominance. There are not that many pitchers that can consistently throw 96, 97, 98 miles an hour deep into starts like Garrett Richards. But, you know, he led the majors in wild pitches each of the last 2 seasons. I think it was the 4th inning yesterday. He just kind of lost his control. He walked the first 2 batters. I think he threw over 40 pitches in that inning, nearly 50 pitches. It's a reminder that if Garrett Richards ever puts it together, there is real ace potential.
Yeah.
And he just hasn't done it.
Byron Buxton continues to look completely overwhelmed, like just as if he does not belong.
I don't understand it.
He just might not be ready yet.
He struck out 3 times yesterday. I'm emotionally invested in Byron Buxton. And
I think
yesterday was a bad start.
I believe there's a very good chance that Byron Buxton is going to be a good Major League Baseball player someday. I think there's an equally good chance that he should be in the minor leagues right now.
And that he will be in the minor leagues if he continues to struggle.
Oh, yeah. I think he's probably one of the most likely players to get sent down in the next month.
He was not good in the spring either.
Yeah. I own him in a few leagues, and it's definitely a stash. Definitely keep him on your bench. If he gets demoted, then look what happened to Rougned Odor last year, right?
Yeah.
Starts the season, he's horrible. He goes down, figures things out in the minors, comes back, and now he's our favorite breakout candidate in 2016, and he had a great finish to last year. So be patient. But if he gets sent down, Byron Buxton, and you can't afford to wait any longer, then maybe you drop him. But don't do anything rash just yet. And if you have not, A, listened to Heath and Chris's Daily Fantasy Live podcast, and B, tried Daily Fantasy yet, you do not know what you're missing. I'm going to tell you about FanDuel, the best place to play daily fantasy baseball this season. FanDuel is easy. You go to FanDuel.com, you enter a contest, you pick a team, stay under the salary cap, sit back, watch some baseball, win some money. I love FanDuel. Unlike seasonal fantasy, you can pick any player in baseball. So the entire league is available to you each night, or whoever's playing anyway. Don't worry about injuries. Don't worry about bad matchups. You don't have to start. Let's see, who did Kershaw face yesterday? Faced the Padres. You don't have to start any Padres. You drafted Matt Kemp. You don't want to start him in a seasonal league because he's facing tough matchups. You don't have to do that in FanDuel. You can pick and choose whoever you want and really test your wits and your skills against other people who love fantasy baseball. So that is a really fun aspect of it. And contests start at just $1. It's really easy to get started. No sign-up fees. Get on FanDuel.com today. Start playing daily fantasy baseball. And you can still play daily fantasy basketball on FanDuel as well. Heath and Chris will help you set those lineups on the Daily Fantasy Live podcast. That's FanDuel.com. Start playing right now. All right. I asked for some Jacob DeGrom nicknames. We have an opportunity to really get started here with something because you got Matt Harvey, the Dark Knight. You've got Syndergaard as Thor. And I guess people pointing out to me that Matt Harvey or that Jacob DeGrom is already the DeGrominator. But I feel like we can do better than that. So, got some comic book themed nicknames yesterday and some hair themed nicknames. We got DePunzel.
That one's good.
I like that one. Loki for the whole Thor thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Except Loki's a bad guy, right?
Yeah, he is.
He's kind of an anti-hero.
I like this one, DeGrom Reaper. What do you think?
No.
You don't like DeGrom Reaper? I think that's very good.
Okay.
It's better than... Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Now, Ryan Thomas suggests Shaggy, which doesn't sound funny, but when you look at Shaggy from the Scooby-Doo movie, like the live,
right,
not the animated version, he does look a lot like that actor, whatever that guy's name is, from Scream. DeGromkowski.
I like that one.
Grommas, Scott suggested Grimace yesterday.
I thought that was a reference to the British stop-motion animated movie, Wallace and Gromit.
It was a McDonald's reference all the way. We got a Hercules, Dr. Manhattan, which I guess is from Watchmen.
Yes.
And how about Cyclops, as in Cy Young, capital C-Y, Clops.
I don't think we have replaced DeGrominator yet. I think at this point, DeGrominator is still the nickname.
I think DeGrom Reaper is terrific.
I'm looking through various lists of the Avengers, and there's not really any that work.
All right, we'll keep working on it.
Chris has ruled it out.
Some more injuries for you. Yasmani Grandal, Howie Kendrick, they could be back next week. Masahiro Tanaka's second start of the season could be pushed back a day into week 2 due to yesterday's rainout. They get started today at 1 p.m. And in that game, Joe Girardi is going to have Aaron Hicks in there against Dallas Keuchel. He's either going to bench Jacoby Ellsbury or Brett Gardner. I think it's going to be Gardner today. It was supposed to be Gardner yesterday. But that's something to keep an eye on. Ellsbury and Gardner will probably sit against lefties, one of them, for Aaron Hicks. Gio Gonzalez had his first start of the season pushed back to next Monday. He'll become a 2-star pitcher, and Joe Ross will pitch this week. If you want some steals from Shin-Soo Choo, he had a stolen base called back due to batter's interference. Robert Stevenson's going to start for Cincinnati on Thursday, so big-time pitching prospect here. It probably just going to be a short stint for him, right, as they get healthier later, you know, pretty soon? Is that what you guys understand about Stevenson?
That sounds right.
All right. So, you know, keep an eye on
that. I mean, I would say that's the plan, but it's not as if they have a plethora of good starting pitchers. If he's good for a couple of starts, I think he could definitely earn his way into the rotation.
And Felix Dubron is on the DL for the A's. So, into the action from yesterday. Here were some good performers. Since we have a lot of stuff here, I'll just list some things. You guys tell me what you want to talk about. Denard Span, 65% owned, homered yesterday. He's not going to homer a lot. He's never hit more than 8 in a season. Matt Duffy, big day for him, 2-for-4 with a home run. We said stack Giants, so I hope you did. Robinson Cano homered off Cole Hamels. Daniel Murphy, 2-for-3 with a home run. Remember, he set a record homering in consecutive games. What was it, like 6 straight games in the playoffs?
I thought 7, but I don't know.
Yeah, whatever it was amazing. Justin Turner had a good game, 2-for-5 with 2 doubles and 2 runs scored. And Gerardo Parra, first game as a Rocky, 3-for-5, 3 doubles and a steal, batting 5th at Arizona. What you got, guys? What do you like?
I was impressed by Murphy. And Parra, I think, being like, both those guys are in new locations. Matt Duffy might have a really good year. I thought Matt Duffy might have a really good year coming into this year.
Yeah, Daniel Murphy and Gerardo Parra. Gerardo Parra definitely the more interesting of the two. I think Daniel Murphy's very much an established guy. There's not much Daniel Murphy could do to change my opinion of him. Hitting home runs in 7 straight games didn't change my opinion of him.
So. No, but I like for guy Adam loves the second half stats.
Okay,
he had a greatly increased ISO and slugging percentage after the All-Star break.
He had a pretty bad first half.
He also. Could. Okay.
I mean, it's Daniel Murphy. He's it's not like he's 25.
Yeah,
I understand.
He's Daniel Murphy.
Well, how old's Gerardo Parra?
Gerardo Parra is someone who's playing every day and going to be playing half his games in Coors Field.
Right.
That's the big thing with Gerardo Parra that makes me interested in him.
Okay.
Gerardo Parra is very interesting to me because Coors Field doesn't just make bad hitters good, and except for like one half.
Nick Huntley.
Yeah. All right, but Huntley's
Clint
got...
Clint Barmus.
But Huntley's only good because he's a catcher, I guess. Clint Barmus?
Yeah, he was pretty good in Colorado.
Like, you talk about DJ LeMahieu. Like, that guy, all he does is hit for average, and the only reason why he's fantasy relevant is because of his steals. You know, so I'm just saying, Gerardo Parra has had a pretty bad career except for a torrid stretch last year, which disappeared, and he ended up being awful again after he cooled down. So I'm just... I wasn't all in on Parra. Like, I know Scott loved Gerardo Parra, and I get the Coors Field thing, and yesterday was very good, but he's been a pretty bad player for most of his career.
Just to be clear, Clint Barmus never had an OPS plus over 100.
Yeah, because he played in Coors Field. OPS plus accounts for the...
Okay, right. He had 1 year where he hit over 250.
Okay.
Clint Barmus is awful. Come on now.
I agree.
I'll tell you, though, I really like that Robinson Cano homered off Cole Hamels, and... You know, I think my bold prediction was what, that he'd be the number 2 second baseman, or did I say number 1?
I don't remember.
But either way, I like what I'm seeing, and you talk about second half stats. I really think that that people have written Robinson Cano off too early. I think I'm going to be a Cano guy this year. I wish I had drafted him.
I mean, largely the most important thing is what Chris said at the beginning of this discussion is I'm going to underreact to what happened yesterday.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about Cano in the same way I was talking about him last week.
That's good.
Yeah, the thing with Cano last season is even when he was struggling really badly early on in the season, couldn't hit for power, was striking out a lot, all the batted ball indicators were still pretty positive. He was hitting too many ground balls to hit for power, but the average batted ball velocity, the hard hit rate were all really solid. There were still good indications that he was making solid contact. And then last season, there was kind of... I think it was right around when they fired their hitting coach, but I don't actually think that's the reason he turned it around, but there was a marked increase in his production.
Let's talk about some pitchers from yesterday. Clayton Kershaw, 7 scoreless innings, 1 hit, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts. Give me one word to describe Clayton Kershaw's performance.
Kershaw.
That's good. I like that.
Best.
Give me one word to describe Felix Hernandez's performance. 6 innings, 1 hit. 3 runs, one earned. Ketel Marte really screwed him in the fifth inning, botching a double play grounder that would have ended the inning. But five walks, six strikeouts at Texas. Also, Seager committed an error in that fateful fifth inning. So give me a word to describe Felix Hernandez's outing.
I'll go stuff.
Chris? Underrated.
What did you say? He's stuff?
I said stuff.
Go on.
Well, you said I can only give one word. Do I get to elaborate?
Yes.
I was trying to think of a word where I'd get to talk more. he struck out six batters in six innings and only gave up one hit. He had the stuff. Uh-huh. He had a little bit of trouble harnessing the stuff, and that's why he walked five batters. But one of the concerns we had, I think, with him in the second half is he didn't seem to have Felix stuff in the second half. He had it yesterday. I'm encouraged.
Right. So that's good. All right. How about Julio Teheran? Six innings, five hits, two runs, three walks, four strikeouts, gave up two home runs against the Nationals. He had a good ERA at home last year. This was a home start. What do you think about Julio Teheran's start to the season?
Quality.
Oh, we can. You don't have to do the one
decent
word thing anymore.
It'd be a much quicker podcast.
I just don't really want to talk about Julio Teheran.
I don't have any Julio Teheran on any of my teams.
Yeah, I don't either. Do you feel good about that after yesterday?
Yeah, I feel fine about it. I mean, I think he's a good pitcher. I don't know how he's going to win more than five or six games.
What do you think about Drew Smyly's start yesterday? 6 2/3, six hits, five runs. That's bad.
Exactly what should have been expected from Drew Smyly going against the Blue Jays.
Yeah, but the funny thing is two lefties homered off him. He gave up three home runs, one to Donaldson, but Tolley and Saunders got him, so. It could have been better, I guess.
I have such a hard time buying into Drew Smyly the way the rest of the office seems to.
I'm with you.
Like, he strikes out a lot of guys, but it's really hard to be really good. Like, Max Scherzer's kind of the only guy who gives up that many fly balls and is really good.
Well, and I don't think we're expecting him to be Scherzer.
Sure, but also the two different times that he's torn a labrum in his shoulder.
That's
pitched through it. That's the bigger one.
Well, do you think that Smyly could be awesome at home? Like Odorizzi?
At home when he's not facing the Blue Jays?
Yes, yes.
Sure. He could be good. He'll strike out a bunch of guys. He'll have some really good performances.
All right, some other guys I thought were worth monitoring. Steven Souza, 1-for-4 with a home run and a strikeout. So he's off to his Souza start. 2-for-8 with a home run, no walks and three strikeouts in two games.
If he can keep that pace up for the year, I'm in.
Are you?
81 homers?
Yeah, I'll take 81 homers, but how many strikeouts would that be?
That'd be 243?
Yeah, something
deal.
Like that.
81 homers, 240 strikeouts. I think that's a fantasy trade you can make.
Domingo Santana, 39% owned. He went 2-for-5 with a run scored. He struck out twice. He led off.
He was on my list of guys to talk about on video today because the ball jumps off his bat. And maybe it was just because the roof was closed in Milwaukee, but the balls that he hit off of Bumgarner and the fact that he's leading off, I think he's probably under-owned.
And yeah, that 39%. Mad Bum did not look like Mad Bum.
That's true.
Man, the Brewers broadcasts, I know, like, you can't just sit there and give up on the season. Obviously, they're going to be horrible, but... I mean, Domingo Santana, you would think this guy, based on the broadcasters, is about to have like an all-star season.
They have to have an all-star.
It ain't going to be Willy Peralta, that's for sure.
Somebody will be.
The minors numbers are still really promising.
Yeah.
You're looking at a guy who has a 921 OPS in AAA. He strikes out way too much to hit for the kind of average he's hit for in the minors, but there's still... reason to be like, he's 23.
I think in that park with his power potential, he should be more than 39% owned.
Yeah, I think Santana's a guy that you want to pick up if you are the AJ Pollock owner. Somebody who is not going to be Pollock, but he's a low cost outfielder who has potential.
I'm going to do that right now.
There you go.
No, you're not.
I'm literally doing it right now.
I already own him in two leagues, so. All right, between Domingo Santana, Michael Saunders, and Joey Rickard, all three had good games.
Yeah.
How would you rank those three?
I think just like you did.
Santana, Saunders, Rickard.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know enough about Joey Rickard. I don't know that anybody really does. That was a good start.
Rickard doubled, two hits.
He looks better than Byron Buxton.
Yeah. He scored a run and he struck out, batting ninth for the Orioles against Minnesota. All right, some interesting batting order observations from yesterday. Steven Vogt for the A's batted eighth. I'm thinking that's because Chris Sale was on the mound and Vogt is left-handed.
That seems right.
Okay, so that's worth noting. He was usually like a fifth or sixth in the order kind of guy, I think, last year, not eighth. Ben Zobrist batted third. Now, they're at an AL park. They had a DH. I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but Zobrist batted third. Rizzo hit cleanup. Any thoughts on that?
He's a, oh my gosh. He's a Madden guy, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if he hits too high in the order for a good portion of the year.
Adam Lind started against the lefty, and he went 0-for-4 with three strikeouts.
Yeah.
But Dae-Ho Lee pinch hit late in the game, and I believe he also struck out.
It's too bad that Dae-Ho Lee isn't a regular fantasy player, because you could have so much fun with team names.
But like Al Melchior, Holy Smoke.
Yeah.
It's very funny. But Adam Lind batting against the lefty, that's interesting. I mean, look, he was facing Cole Hamels, so you don't expect too much from him, but if he gets more regular playing time, he, in points leagues, becomes a better option. Chris Owings started in center field against the lefty for Arizona. He batted second. That's not a surprise. Let's hope Socrates Brito gets the start today. By the way, I said Dae-Ho Lee struck out. I think I was confusing him with Socrates Brito, who did pinch hit and strike out. And Ruben Odor batted seventh. And I see, I don't know that I see him immediately climbing up in the order, because they have a pretty good order. I think it's going to have to be DeShields who struggles for Odor to move up to like first or second. What do you guys think?
I think if he hit seventh all year, he was overdrafted.
You think so?
Yes.
I think if he hits like he did last season, he's not going to hit seventh all year.
Those are both facts.
And in the bullpen, Sean Doolittle pitched in a non-save situation through a scoreless inning.
He looked pretty good, though.
Did he?
I don't get that, because I think they play three straight games.
I don't know, but he was, I'm pretty sure his velocity was up, and,
good.
I was reading on Twitter, I think he's developed a different grip on his changeup. I was reading, there was something about that, and it looked pretty good.
Well, that's good, because he's been very, very reliant in his career on his fastball. Like 90% of the time he throws his fastball, so that would be nice. Sean Doolittle. The college basketball game last night was so unbelievable. I really feel sorry for you guys if you didn't. It wasn't just the finish. I mean, what an amazing game. Freaking Villanova. Unbelievable run. I got to look up what they shot in the tournament, because I think they shot like 55% going into the game last night. They just made everything.
I believe they shot the best in a championship game in the last 50 years.
And they were already having the best NCAA tournament from three-point range, I think, ever.
It's just crazy. Makes me feel a lot better about Miami getting blasted by Villanova, though, I'll tell you that. So, Team Name Tuesday. People wanted to keep it going, so fine, we'll keep it going. D in Mountain View, California suggests, this is a very elaborate one. If Lovin' You, YU, is Wong, I don't want to be right. Isn't David right?
Yeah, I don't think that's, we've gotten that one before, right?
Yeah, I think so. What if he did, if Lovin' You is Wong, I don't walk a be right?
No.
Too much?
Too much.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
From Peter, I drafted pretty well, but my closers suck, so they are my Agrilli's heel.
I liked it.
See?
It's kind of making light of a very serious injury that Jason Agrilli suffered.
Chris
season,
has done a lot of Achilles heel research over the last 48 hours.
It's the last, like, yeah, I'm kind of obsessed with the Achilles.
Okay.
It's a basketball thing.
I think we're approaching the point where Chris decides to cut his own just to see like what the rehab process is like.
It honestly sounds like the most painful possible injury.
Yeah, it does. Sounds pretty bad. Here's a team name from Tim in Portland. This is a Socrates Brito play on words. Aristotle Chalupa.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think enough people are going to. Like, if you are in a league full of Diamondbacks fans, I think that one probably goes over pretty well.
Yeah, I would agree. And then James in D.C. has a Ninja Turtles-themed team name. Leonardo, Papel Bonatello, Rysel, and Michael Angelo, as in Michael Franco.
I get it.
Yeah, that's pretty. Not bad.
By the way, Sean Doolittle threw two changeups last night. Both of them were swinging strikes.
Ooh.
So there you go.
Hooray. Who do we like in DFS today, fellas?
It's such a weird situation because yesterday we had like almost every good pitcher in the league. And then you look at it today and it's John Lester, Johnny Cueto, and nobody that I'm even kind of excited about.
David Price should be pitching today, right?
Yes, he is.
He's not. They're not on the main slate.
Yeah.
No, Keuchel and Price are at 1 p.m. I believe.
Yeah, I'm only looking at the 7 o'clock slate because that's where all the big tournaments are. I'm probably going to play a lot of Johnny Cueto, and Chris is probably not going to like that very much. I think if you're playing in cash games,
Hold on. What? I'm with you on the Johnny Cueto optimism.
Okay,
train.
You're with me. I did not know that. I didn't know anybody was.
Apparently, you don't follow me on Twitter. Because a big thing that I've been talking about is the fact that Adam Wainwright and Johnny Cueto had basically the same ADP on Fantasy Pros. I think they were one or two spots apart on the consensus, which is insane. That is nuts. There's no reason to be more optimistic about Adam Wainwright than Johnny Cueto.
But yeah, you didn't that hear that about Chris's prognosis for Cueto's elbow? Or Scott's prognosis for Cueto's elbow? Scott has diagnosed early onset Tommy John surgery.
Okay.
I think Lester's probably the play in cash games. I will play maybe one Lester lineup, one Cueto lineup in cash games. As far as cheap pitchers, is there anybody you like?
I got a name for you. Against Oakland, who was really bad against lefties last year, Jose Quintana.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that one makes sense.
And I looked at the batter versus pitcher data, of course, and for what it's worth, the current A's hitters that have faced Jose Quintana have a 4.93 OPS against Jose Quintana. So he's done well in limited sample against the guys he has faced.
Okay. Okay. We could do some real quick BVP All-Stars. We'll do some more of these on the Daily Fantasy Live.
I kind of like Aaron Sanchez as a cheap pitcher against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I think Tampa Bay is bad. Adrian Beltre has a 925 OPS in 36 at-bats against Asashi Iwakuma.
Yeah, I saw that.
And,
Let me just say, I got my favorite one. And I don't want to give too much away because maybe I'll do mine and I'll say listen to the Daily Fantasy Live podcast if you want to hear the experts talk about it. I don't want to take too much away from your show. But Kyle Seager is interesting to me. Now, he's facing a lefty, and that's usually not good for Seager. And he's facing Martin Perez, who was great against lefties in 2015. He gave up one extra base hit in 63 at-bats. I'm almost positive Kyle Seager had that extra base hit. It was a home run. He's 10 for 20 with 3 home runs off Martin Perez. And he homered off a lefty yesterday. So, Seager is very interesting to me today.
Yeah, the last thing I will say, and the only thing I'll really say about hitters is, pretty much always, even though I'm as down on Nelson Cruz as anybody could be going into this year, pretty much always when the Mariners face a bad left-handed pitcher in a good hitter's park, I'm going to play Nelson
Cruz. Well, you're down on Nelson Cruz for the season because of age and
if he got to play all year in Texas against Martin Perez, I would be very high on him.
All right, sneaky shortstop play. Actually, not sure if he's eligible at shortstop. I imagine he is, but Jed Jerko. 803 OPS last year against lefties facing John Neese, who he's 5-for-9 against with 2 doubles.
John Neese is going to be so good this year. It's a new John Neese. It's a serious John Neese.
He might be. People are obviously going to be putting Diamondbacks in their lineup against Chad Bettis, but Bettis had a 3.55 ERA on the road last year, including one good start against Arizona. Are you thinking about stacking Diamondbacks? Like Socrates Brito?
I probably won't.
Okay.
Probably not. I'll probably stack Giants again.
You want to talk about more splits? Jimmy Nelson in 2015, lefties had an 8.76 OPS against Jimmy Nelson. Righties had a 5.68 OPS against Nelson. He faces the Giants, so you got...
Just play all the Denard Span again.
Yeah, Span, Brandon Belt maybe.
Panic.
Kevin Pillar is 3-for-8 with a home run and 2 doubles against Jake Odorizzi. What's Pillar's price?
I don't know, but we need to at least get some type of cutoff here.
No, but look, I'm just going
to
say,
for your batter versus pitcher stats that you give, you have to have a minimum number of at-bats.
Look, if he's gotten eight at-bats and 3 extra base hits, that tells me a little bit of something. But regardless, you're talking about the leadoff hitter for Toronto.
Can we get at least a double-digit at-bats?
No, if it's 3-for-8 with a home run and 2 doubles,
what if he was 4-for-4?
That would then I would be interested in him.
That's one game. He had a good game.
No, there's no way a guy goes 4-for-4 against a pitcher in one game. That pitcher would be out of the game by the time.
What if nobody else got a hit against him that day?
That would be surprising to me.
Kevin Pillar is $3,000.
If Kevin Pillar were 3-for-8 with a home run and two doubles against Chris Archer, I wouldn't suggest starting him. But it's Jake Odorizzi, who's not great, and Pillar's leading off for the Blue Jays, so he's not a bad start to begin with.
You know who my sneaky stack's going to be today?
Who?
The Marlins.
Against
I don't
who?
Particularly oh, think Justin Verlander is still good. I think the Marlins offense is maybe a little bit underrated heading into this year. Everywhere except for in this office.
Who's high on the Marlins?
You guys are all starting to buy it.
Who in this office is who in this
Ryan
office?
Bass.
Okay, he's the only one because Al and I have had the life sucked out of us as Marlins fans.
As soon as they put Adam Conley in the rotation,
that's
you guys
true.
Started buying
that's
back
true.
In.
Adam Conley is the bright shining star of my life right now.
All right, last thing for me, James Shields going up against the Dodgers. Dodgers, despite what they did yesterday, I don't think they have a great lineup right now, and they struck out 10 times yesterday. Strikeouts are huge, so you could look for James Shields, I suppose. If you want more, the DFS experts have it on the Daily Fantasy Live podcast. All right, some emails and tweets, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Al Ralston says, I liked what I was Adonis Garciaing from the Braves third baseman yesterday. Can you talk about Adonis Garcia, on the podcast on Tuesday? Go for it.
Man, how can we talk about one of the Braves' young stars when Scott White's not here?
Stop picking on Scott White when he's not
I'm not picking on Scott White. He knows them better than we do.
Okay. You were picking on it. But...
Chris, what do you have to say about Adonis Garcia?
I mean, I honestly haven't seen much of him. I didn't watch that game yesterday. The Cuban League numbers are decent, but they're not like spectacular. The minor league numbers are not great. It looks like he might hit for average. He might be able to avoid strikeouts. I don't know how much power there is there, and he doesn't seem to have much speed to make up for that. So it might be a situation where he's an empty batting average kind of guy.
Next email, Jesse from Ontario, Canada. Dear Michael Scott, Jim Halpert, and Dwight Schrute. And Jesse from Ontario, Canada had the gall to let me know in the email that was the office. Come on now, that's too easy, Jesse.
Yeah. Can I just point out one thing?
Uh-huh.
Can I just tell you guys the most Heath Cummings thing that has ever happened in this office?
Yeah.
Is that Heath Cummings insists.
I don't insist.
That he is the Jim Halpert of our office. Insists.
I actually totally agree with that.
He is the Andy of the office. 100%. You even look like Ed Helms.
And sound like Ed Helms.
You are 100%.
No, I think
Andy
he's
Dwyer.
The
no, not the, what's his last name? Andy, whatever his last name.
I don't
name.
Know.
Bernard. You know, we don't have a lot of cool people in the office. It is not a cool office.
I do stand alone in that regard.
Nick is a pretty cool guy. But, yeah.
Nick doesn't quite have as much chill as Jim does.
No, Nick is definitely not Jim, no. All right, so anyway, here's the question from Jesse. Who would you rather in an AL-only league have, 5x5? Nori Aoki, Rajay Davis, Jackie Bradley. Please put them in order. Nori Aoki, Rajay Davis, Jackie Bradley.
I would rate them Bradley, Davis, Aoki.
I'd go Davis, Aoki, Bradley.
From Eric. Dear John, Donald, and Ted. Oh, I know them. Oh. Politics. 10-team head-to-head categories league with on-base percentage instead of batting average and a deep bench. I'm happy with my draft, but I have a glaring hole at first base. I'm using Lucas Duda. So should I... options on the waiver wire are Carlos Santana, Will Myers, Ryan Zimmerman, Yanhervis Solarte, Logan Forsythe. Would you start any of those ahead of Duda? It's an OBP league.
If I had a deep bench, I would probably be starting Santana, and I'd want Duda or Myers on my bench.
Yeah, Santana is someone who's pretty much a lock for 90-plus walks. He's done it in 5 straight seasons now. Really underrated player and has more value in that type of league, yeah.
And from Mark, Brian, Bo, and Dion, he says.
2 sports stars.
I had to look up the Brian, I'm not going to lie. That's Brian Jordan, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think DeGrom is definitely the Silver Surfer. Just the hair alone screams surfer. But DFS question, due to the horrible weather, should I pay for hitters who play in better weather, like indoor parks, and vice versa, pitchers who are pitching in cold?
I did actually look up yesterday during our DFS podcast a hardball time study that looked at player performance based on weather, and they did find that strikeouts go up and BABIP goes down in colder weather. So that is worth keeping in mind. It is worth it is probably worth paying up for pitchers in cold weather. Now, hitters playing in better weather, like as far as rain goes, I mean, that doesn't really make a difference to me. But you should probably try to avoid cold weather if you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say tiebreaker. Like, I'm not just sorting my FanDuel options by guys playing in above 40-degree weather, although I did say yesterday that I think they should just ban baseball below 40 degrees because that's dumb.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to sit and watch that. Nobody wants to play when it's that cold.
Hey, speaking of DFS, I want to read you three pitching lines from last year from the same pitcher against the same opponent. Complete game, 6-hit shutout with 1 walk and 12 strikeouts. 7 innings, 3 hits, no walks, no runs, 9 strikeouts. So 7 scoreless, 3 hits, 9 strikeouts.
Okay.
And finally, 6 innings, 3 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. So that's like 22 innings with like 30 strikeouts or something. Not quite that many. No runs in 3 freaking starts. That's Dallas Keuchel against the Yankees. So if you're playing the early slate in cold weather, Keuchel could definitely be your guy. Last email is from Josh. He says, "Dear Edge, Christian, and Gangrel."
I remember them. They were the Acolytes.
Very nice.
Oh, I didn't remember them at all. How high are you guys on Cameron Rupp in a one-catcher deep head-to-head points league? 16 teams.
Not starting.
Yeah.
No.
He's not my top 16.
Yeah, stick with JT Realmuto in that format. Josh. All right, Chris and Heath, thank you very much. Great show.
Thank you.
It was a good time. I really enjoyed it. It's every Tuesday.
Laughs were had.
Yeah.
Oh, friendships were strengthened.
Every Tuesday, every Thursday is going to be Heath, Chris, and Al. It's going to be our version of NPR's Science Friday. It's going to be Science Thursday on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. Calculators at the ready. And we look
forward
to that.
And then Heath will be here as well.
I'm Adam Acer, Heath Cummings, Chris Towers, and the rest of the Fantasy Baseball Today crew. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow to recap Tuesday's action.